Masechet Shabbat in memory of Marcel and Jack Shasho. Ruach Adonai Tanihim Began Eden. Amen.
Daf Mem Vav. Today's daf has been dedicated by Mr. Jerry Harari and family in memory of Yosef Ben Simcha. Today's daf is being studied by Ilu Nishmat Acham Baruch Rafael Ben Miriam Zichrono Levracha and Abraham Ben Esther Ruach Hashem Tanihem Began Eden. Amen. We are actually on Daf Mem He Amud Bet. And we are going to start Ki Atar of Yitzhak. That's 17 lines from the bottom. The Gemara. Ki Atar of Yitzhak Rabbi Yosef. When Rabbi Yitzhak Rabbi Yosef came to Babel, Amar Rabbi Yochanan, he said in the name of Rabbi Yochanan, Halakha Rabbi Yehuda. Regarding the law of Mukseh, we had two shitot. Rabbi Yehuda was the most stringent in the laws of Mukseh. One of his stringencies were that he holds something that went through Ben HaShemashot Mukseh, for example, a ner that was lit through Ben HaShemashot, even after it goes out on Shabbat, is still Mukseh. Because he holds of the opinion that says, Migu de itkatsai. The Ben HaShemashot, it katsai lekuli yoma. So Rabbi Yohanan ruled like that strict opinion of Rabbi Yehuda regarding Mukseh. The Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi Amar, halakha k'Rabbi Shimon. Whereas Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi was lenient. He said, no, we follow Rabbi Shimon, who said that the ner, so long as it's lit, is Mukseh. But once it goes out, then already it's mutar l'taltel b'Shabbat. Amar Rabbi Yosef, Hainu de'amar Rabba bar bar Hanna Amar Rabbi Yohanan, Amru halakha k'Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yosef comes along and says, now we understand what Rabba bar bar Hanna said in the name of Rabbi Yohanan. Because if you remember, we had that statement yesterday, Rabba bar bar Hanna said in the name of Rabbi Yohanan that Rabbi Yohanan said, Amru halakha k'Rabbi Shimon. They said, meaning the rabbis in the yeshiva said, halakha k'Rabbi Shimon. So Rabbi Yosef makes the diyuk and says, Amru, yeah, they said, Vele lo svidale. But he himself doesn't hold of it. Which means, whereas Rabbi Yohanan himself holds like the Yehuda, that's why he was careful when he said, Amru. They said. Who's they? The rabbis in the yeshiva. They were posek like Rabbi Shimon. But he himself, he follows the Yehuda. Amar le Abaye le Rabbi Yosef. So Abaye tells Rabbi Yosef, Ve'at lo tispera de Rabbi Yohanan ke Rabbi Yehuda. Which means, you didn't know on your own that Rabbi Yohanan follows Rabbi Yehuda? Which means, you needed Rabbi Yitzhak to come from Bavil. I'm sorry, to come from Eretz Yisrael to Bavil, Rabbi Yitzhak. You needed him to come along and say that Rabbi Yohanan follows Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yosef, you should have known that on your own. You didn't need Rabbi Yitzhak to tell you this. Why? How should he know this on his own? So the Gemara says, Ha Rabbi Abba v'Rabbi Aseh, Ikli'u lebe Rabbi Abba d'min Haifa. We have a story. Rabbi Abba and Rabbi Aseh. They found themselves in the house of Rabbi Abba from Haifa. V'nafal minarta al gilime Rabbi Aseh. And a menorah, candelabra, that was lit through Shabbat, that went out. No, the menorah went out, but it was lit through Shabbat. And it fell on Rabbi Aseh. He had his gilima on, his robe, and it fell on him. So what did he do to the rabbi? Velo tiltela. And he didn't move it. Meaning, he didn't pick it up with his hands. Now, who's the opinion that says a menorah that was lit through Shabbat that went out is Mukseh? That's got to be the Yehuda. And the Gemara explains that. My Tama, what's the reason why the Aseh did not deal with the menorah? Lav mishum de Rabbi Asse talmidei de Rabbi Yohanan ava. Must be because Rabbi Asse was a student of Rabbi Yohanan. Rabbi Yohanan could be Yehuda Sfirale. And we know Rabbi Yohanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda the itle mukse. And therefore, they were telling Rabbi Yosef, Abaye was telling Rabbi Yosef, even without Rabbi Yitzhak's ruling that Rabbi Yohanan goes like Rabbi Yehuda, you should have known it from this story. It seems that this story was a famous story. You should have realized that from the fact that Rabbi Asseh did not lift the menorah off of him, must because he's a student of Rabbi Yohanan, and Rabbi Yohanan must hold like Rabbi Yehuda, hence Rabbi Asseh did not handle the menorah, because it is mukseh, because it was lit through Ben Hashem Ashot. So what did you need Rabbi Yitzhak to come and tell you halakha zak Rabbi Yehuda? So he answers. Amar Leh, so Rabbi Yosef says, Minartaka Amart. Well, you're bringing me a story from a menorah. Minarta Shani. That case is different. Which means, what Rabbi Yosef is going to do over here now is and say, that case doesn't prove me anything. Because the menorah is mukseh, even according to the Bishimon. So therefore, from that story, I wouldn't know anything. Now, the menorah is going to be mukseh according to the Bishimon, not because it was lit through Ben Hashem Ashot. That's clear. For another reason, new reason, the Gemara is going to say, because it's koveya lo makom. What does that mean? That means certain items that are, we'll call them precious to a person. Where, how do we know it's precious? So it's evident from where he keeps them. He doesn't move them. He leaves them in a certain spot. Things that are precious, that you don't want to break, that you don't want to be used for other things, you put in a special spot that's called Miyahed Lo Makom. You designate a place for that. That's really an indication of how important that item is to you, because you always keep it in a certain spot, you don't move it. That would fall under the category of Mukseh Mahamat Hasron Kis. One of the levels of Mukseh is something that you're concerned about, that it doesn't get ruined, that you're concerned about it getting broken or damaged. That would be called Mukseh Mahamat Hasron Kis. Now, the Gemara is going to say one of the ways you can measure if something is Mukseh Mahamat Hasron Kis is by placing it in a specific spot and you don't move it. Now, a menorah is one of those type of items where you miyahed lo makom. So, Rabbi Shimon, forget about the fact that it was lit on Shabbat. That's not the issue here. Even Rabbi Shimon will subscribe and say what? If you miyahed lo makom, it is mukseh mahmat haslon kis. Again, when we say Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold of mukseh, it doesn't mean he doesn't hold of any mukseh. He's just more lenient than mukseh. But in this case, he'll hold his mukseh. So, what Rabbi Yosef saying, I have no indication from that story. That story that Rabbi Asid didn't lift up the menorah, I have no idea who he's holding like. I could say he's even going like Rabbi Shimon. Oh, so how do I know that Rabbi Yohanan holds halakha ka Rabbi Yehuda from when Rabbi Yitzhak came from Eretz Israel and gave the testimony? So this story, Rabbi Yosef says no indication. Now we're going to see why. I told it to you outside, now we read it inside. Hora Rish Lakish mit Sidon. Rish Lakish made a ruling in Sidon. Sidon is a place. Menorah haniteret biyado ahat mutar. Rish Lakish says, if you can lift the menorah with one hand, meaning it's not a heavy menorah, it's a small menorah, if you can move it with one hand, mutar. It's not mukse. Letaltela, mutar letaltela. Bishtei yadav. But if it can only be handled with two hands, meaning it's a big menorah, asu letaltela. Okay, we'll see Rish Lakish's opinion soon. Rabbi Yohanan amar, this is what we need. Rabbi Yohanan said, anu en lanu ela bener k'Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yohanan said, regarding a ner, we rule like Rabbi Shimon. What was the ner? Ner was an earthenware vessel that was used once. Rabbi Shimon said that ner is not mukseh on Shabbat. Why? Because he doesn't subscribe to the opinion that says mukseh mahmat mi'us. Even though in there we said a earthenware receptacle, once you use it once, becomes grimy and things like that, But Rabbi Shimon said, doesn't matter. He doesn't hold the Mukseh Mahmat Miyus. Therefore, on Shabbat, if you want to use this Ner to store, let's say, candies and non-Mukseh items, Rabbi Shimon says, it's okay. So Rabbi Yohanan said, regarding a Ner, meaning Mukseh Mahmat Miyus, we hold like Rabbi Shimon, meaning we're lenient in that area. Aval, however, Menorah, Ben Nitla Biyado Achat, Ben Nitla B'Shtei Yadav, but regarding a menorah, whether it's a small one, whether it's a big one, asul letaltela, it's mukseh. Why? V'ta'ama amai, rabav Rabbi Yosef dami tarvayu, o'il v'adam kovei ala makom. As we explained, since people designate it in a certain spot, so therefore it's going to be mukseh. So you see this onyan of kovei ala makom. And therefore what Rabbi Yosef was saying, from the story that Rav Aseh did not move the menorah off of him, you have no raya. Menorah is mukseh, even according to Rabbi Shimon, because of the anyan of kovei alo makom. So if I had no idea what Rabbi Yohanan held, only based on Rabbi Yitzhak that he said halakha follows Rabbi Yehuda. Comes the Gemara and says, Gemara is going to now challenge this concept. The Gemara says, Vare kilat hatanim. Kilat hatanim is a canopy bed that they make for grooms, hatanim. What was it? If you have your pirush hajj, you can probably see a nice picture of it. I'll try to explain it to you. It's a bed frame. It has two posts coming out of the side. Two, only two posts. One on one side end of it, and one on the other. And the posts go up. It has a cross beam across the center of it. And you put a sheet over it. And it drapes down. It drapes down and comes to a point on top. That's the kilat hatanim, as opposed to a regular kila, would be a regular canopy bed, would have four posts. And then you put a cover over it and have a roof on top. The kilat hatanim is different in that it only has one post at the head of the bed, one post at the foot of the bed, in the center of it. Oh, there you go. You see it in picture 348 in your, I'm sorry, 382. Wow. 382 in the Pirush Chai. You see, it's got two.
Why difference?
I guess the Hatanim, they made him a special bed kind of day. You know, the Chbod Hatan, maybe. You know, maybe it's a little fancier, maybe it's a little nicer. But the I'm just giving you the difference why one's called Kilat Hatanim as opposed to a regular Kila. Basically, the point is it doesn't have a roof. You see, the roof comes to a point on top. Now, the Gemara says, Vahare Kilat Hatanim. The Adam Koveya Lo Makom, which means people designated in a certain spot, which means just like the menorah, they put it in a certain area, they don't move it. And still we have a statement that says, Kilat Hatanim Mutar Lintota Umutar Lefarka Beshabbat. Meaning, a Kilat Hatanim, it is permissible Lintota, to open it up. Which means you want to open up the sheet. Like if you've seen the picture, same picture to the left of it, you see how they're opening it up? They're making a little hole. Actually, they're moving the sheets over so you can get in. That's lintota. You want to open it in. Now, leforka is to take it apart, so to speak. Now, there's no problem of ohel over here. On Shabbat, you're not allowed to disassemble an ohel. This is really not an ohel, it's not a tent, because the top is very narrow, it doesn't come to a tefah. The width of the top, the roof, comes to a point. So there's no problem of disassembling an ohel. But bottom line, they're letting you deal with this. What do you mean? It should be mukseh. Since you miyahed makom, based on what you just told me, that yihud makom makes mukseh, so the kilat hatanim as well should be mukseh. But we see it's not. Because Shemuel said clearly, "Mutar l'ntota," you can open it up. "Umutar lefarkan," you can disassemble it. That's the question. So comes the Gemara and says, "That's moving it. You're moving mukseh based on what we just said. How could you do that?" Miyachid lo makom. So the Gemara says, "Ela amar Abaye." Abaye says, "I'll tell you why the menorah is mukseh. The menorah is not mukseh because miyachid lo makom." We're going to give a new reason why menorah is mukseh. Why? Amar Abaye b'shel chuliyot. We're talking about a menorah that's made up of chuliyot, pieces, components. It's not one shot. It's not one one piece. It's different parts. And therefore what? Gezerah. We're concerned if you're going to pick it up, it might fall apart. Might break. And if it might break, what are you going to do? You might put it back together again. Putting it back together again, you could transgress one of the melachot. It's actually the machloket amongst the Rishonim, which melacha you're going to transgress. Some will say it's considered boneh. Some opinions say en binyan bekelim, that there's really no boneh by putting back together a vessel, so it'll be makibe patish. Either way, the rabbis were concerned about that the menorah that's made out of chuliyot, if it's going to be handled on Shabbat, it'll fall, you'll have to reassemble it, and you'll over one of the melachot. So the Gemara says, if you're telling me that the menorah that's mukseh is chuliyot, is one that's made out of components, my ta'amad Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish Deshari. Rabbi Shimon ben Lakish, if you remember, made a difference. He said, a small one is okay. A big one is forbidden. What's the difference? If it has chuliyot, what's the difference between big or small? Bottom line, it should be the same gezerah. So the Gemara says, my chuliyot. Now, what did we mean when we said chuliyot that's made out of components? Ke'en chuliyot. It's like components. Like, it's like it's made out of pieces. What does that mean, like? The it be hidki. It has hidki. What a hidki. It's really made up of one piece. But what? It has ridges. Now, when it has ridges, it looks like it's made up of different pieces. The ridges there are just for like design, so to speak. But when you look at it, it looks like what? That's the part that comes apart. So therefore now we're talking about a menorah that doesn't have chuliyot. If it has chuliyot, according to everybody, there's not going to be a difference between a big menorah and a small menorah. Gezerah, it might break, and you might put it back together again. So what are we talking about over there? Where's the machloket? It's talking about a menorah that has hidki. What is hidki? Ridges. What's the issue now? That's Gemara. Hilkach. Therefore, bottom line, chuliyot. If it's made out of pieces, ben gedola, ben ketana, asura letaltela. Whether it's a big menorah, whether it's a small menorah, mukse. Gedola name, even a big menorah, the itba hidki that has ridges, gezera atu gedola de chuliyot. It's also going to be forbidden. Gezera that people might think what? That it has components to it, pieces, and therefore the rabbis made a gezer on that one as well. Because by a big one, Rabotai, it was common to make it out of components. Because it's big, you don't make it out of one piece. So therefore, if it has ridges, by a gedola, it's also mukse gezera atu chuliyot. So where's the machloket then? Between the shtakish and the Yohanan, ki peligi beketana deit bahidki. The machloket is in one type of menorah. A small menorah that has ridges. Mor sabar gazlinan, Rabbi Yohanan that said ben gedola ben ketana, he holds what? That even by a small one that has ridges, mukseh gezerah, to one that has chuliyot. Umor sabar, the Shtakish will say lo gazlinan, and the Shtakish will say no, by a small one, since it's not so common to make it out of chuliyot, and this one has hidki, therefore, we're not going to make a gezerah. So bottom line, the menorah story is as follows. It's only one type of menorah that they were arguing on. And that's a menorah that you could hold with one hand. That's a menorah ketana. But not a regular menorah ketana. A menorah ketana that has ridges, has hidki. Mishtakish will tell you what? Not mukseh. Why? Hidki. What's the problem? You can't fall apart. And I'm not going to make a gezerah on a small menorah atu a menorah of chuliyot. Whereas the Yohanan will say no. All menorot, whether big or small, whether they have chuliyot or hidki, all of them are mukseh. Chuliyot, obviously, because they might break. You might put it back together again. Hidki by gedola, gezera, atu chuliyot. Even ketana with hidki, gezera, that it might have chuliyot, and therefore, Rabbi Yohanan said, therefore, in that story, going back, just to finish up, Rabbi Aseh, when the menorah fell on him, he didn't lift it up. We could say because of different gezerah. He didn't lift it up because even the Bishamon could agree to this type of mukseh. That what? Because of the menorah and hinki and this whole business over here. Therefore, Rav Yosef didn't bring that story. He had to rely on Rav Yitzhak to tell me the deen of Rav Yohanan was posek like Rabbi Yehuda regarding mukseh. This menorah doesn't tell us anything. This menorah was mukseh for a different reason. Comes the Gemara further. Gemara still challenges Rabbi Yohanan. Did Rabbi Yohanan rule like Rabbi Yehuda regarding mukseh? Again, the Gemara's fact is Rabbi Yohanan goes like Rabbi Yehuda. Now the Gemara's going to question, is that so? Why? V'amar Rabbi Yohanan halakha kestam mishnah. Rabbi Yohanan has a famous rule throughout Shas. Halakha follows setam mishnah. What does setam mishnah mean? Well, you have a mishnah, and nobody's arguing in the mishnah, and it's nameless, meaning there's no name in the mishnah, and there's no machloket in the mishnah. Rabbi Yohanan always rules like that mishnah. Whatever the mishnah says, there's hundreds of mishnayot like that. One mishnah is the following. Vitnan. We learned this mishnah earlier. Mukhni shela. We're talking about a wagon. And it has a wheel. The mukhni was the wheel of the wagon. Bismanchi nishmetet. At a time that the wheel is removable, in hiburla, it's not considered connected to the sheda, even though it is connected, but since it's removable, it's considered a separate entity, and therefore, the enim de detayma, as we learned earlier, that for a sheda, for this wagon on top, for it to become tameh, it's got to be a certain size. If it's bigger than a certain size, meaning if it can hold more than 40 se'ah of water, then it does not receive tuma. How do you measure? So we said through displacement. You place the sheda in water, and if it can displace 40 se'ah of water, so then already it is not susceptible to tuma. So since the wheel is detachable, when you use the displacement theory, you don't put the wheel in as well. If the wheel was considered attached, then you'd actually place the wheel in also to the water, and therefore, you know, the wheel displaces water itself, and therefore it'll, you know, contribute to the shi'ud. But since the wheel comes off, when you're measuring the box to see how much it can contain, you do it minus the wheel. That's the first thing. En nimdedet ayma, like we learned. The en matzelet ayma be'ohel amet. I'll explain this again. En matzelet ayma. Let's say the sheda is a big sheda, holds more than 40 se'ah. So anything that's inside of it, as this thing travels over a met, let's say, cannot become tameh, because the box is very big. The tum'ah cannot penetrate it. However, let's say you have a wheel. Now, let's say something is protruding out of this box, and it's over the wheel. Now you have an item sticking out of the box on top, and it's just suspended over the wheel. And now it's traveling over a mit. Anything in the box is going to be tahor. But this wheel over here now, since it's a vessel, it's a wooden vessel, the wheel is made out of wood, it's considered a kid. It's not considered one with the sheda, because it's removable. Therefore, it's treated on its own. Therefore, the tum'ah is going to affect that item that's resting over the wheel. Because if you would say it's connected, so then already it's one piece. Since the top is not susceptible to tum'ah, and the wheel is attached, and, you know, undetachable, so therefore the wheel also protects from tum'ah, just as the box does. But since it's detachable, so would we say that if something is, let's say, suspended over that wheel, sticking out of the box, suspended over the wheel, and you went over tum'ah, the wheel will not protect it. And that item will be tameh. The en, that is what we needed this for. The en gorerin ota b'shabbat b'zman sheyesh aleha ma'ot. Which means, if let's say in that wheel, they put money in it. So you saw the pictures earlier, you saw that the wheel itself had a spot to put money. Look on, yeah, any of those pages, 367, 364, you see it's got a little hole in the wheel
where they're storing money. Exactly, 364. If there was money in there, in the wheel itself, it says, you're not allowed to wheel it on Shabbat. Again, ve'en gurin ota b'Shabbat, when? Bizman shiyesh aleha ma'ot. Now what's the implication? Ha'en aleha ma'ot. But if there was no money in the wheel, sharia, it'd be permissible. When it said that only if there's money in the wheel it's forbidden to drag it. Oh, we understand why, because it's a muksende. Implying what? If there's no money in the wheel on Shabbat, it would be permissible to drag it. Even though, there's the implication, even though there was money, let's say, in the wheel through Ben Hashemashot, bottom line, now that there's no money in the wheel on Shabbat itself, mutar. You understand the diuk we're making? Only, what did the Mishnah say? When there's money in the wheel, then it's forbidden. We understand that. There's money in the wheel, you cannot move it. So the wheel becomes a base for mukseh. You cannot move it on Shabbat. Implying what? That if there was no money in the wheel on Shabbat, mutar. Even though, let's say, Ben Hashemashot, there was money in it. Whose opinion is that? The Bishimon. That's a Stam Mishnah. And the Yohanan rules like this Mishnah. So therefore we see that happened. You tell me Rabbi Yohanan holds like Rabbi Yehuda, when he rules like a Stam Mishnah. From this Stam Mishnah, it's mashma that even though the money was there, Ben Hashemashot, so long as it's not there on Shabbat itself, it's permissible. So comes again and says, Amar Rabbi Zera. Rabbi Zera comes along and says, Tehe Mishnatenu, establish that Mishnah, Shelo Ayu Aleha Ma'ot Kol Ben Hashemashot. Which means, don't learn the Mishnah where there was money there during Ben Hashemashot. Learn the Mishnah in a case where there was no money there, Ben Hashemashot. Which means, if there was no money there, Ben Hashemashot, then understand the Mishnah as follows. Dafka, if there's money there on Shabbat. If there's money there on Shabbat, Mukseh. But if there's no money there on Shabbat, Mutar. Why? Because we're talking about a case where there was no money there going to Ben Hashemashot. Who's that going like? Can be going even like Rabbi Yehuda. Shelo lishbor devarav shel Rabbi Yohanan. We don't want to break the words of Rabbi Yohanan, which means if we have a way to learn this Mishnah in order to keep it at peace with Rabbi Yohanan's statement, why learn it in a difficult way to break the words of Rabbi Yohanan and make them contradictory? So therefore, Rabbi Yohanan really holds like Rabbi Yehuda. I worry about that Mishnah. That Mishnah is not a contradiction. All that Mishnah told us is, if there's money in the wheel on Shabbat, it's mukseh. And what's the implication? If there was no money on the wheel on Shabbat, it's not mukseh. And when we're talking about a case, what? Where it wasn't there through Ben Hashemashot. That could be according to Rabbi Yehuda. And therefore we'd rather say that in order to keep Rabbi Yohanan's statements shalom. Amar Rabbi Yehoshua ben Levi. Emarat tells a story. Pama hat alach Rabbi l'diuspera. Rabbi once went to a place called Diuspera. Vehora, and he ruled b'menorah k'Rabbi Shimon benir. Very cryptic statement he said here. He said, regarding a menorah, we hold like Rabbi Shimon of a ner. What does this say? You're throwing menorah, you're putting ner. What does the statement mean? So the Gemara says, Iba'ilu. The Gemara didn't know what he meant. Iba'ilu. What does he mean by this statement? Hora b'menorah k'Rabbi Shimon b'ner lehetera. Which is, could be meant like this. What does Rabbi Shimon hold by ner? Ner is an earthenware receptacle that was used. Non-mukseh. Right? Mutar. He doesn't know the mukseh mahmat mius. So what Rabbi said was, a menorah that we're discussing above, with this hidki on it, he was coming along to say, a menorah with hidki is not mukseh. But how did he say it? Instead of just saying it simply, it's not mukseh, he said, regarding a menorah, as the same deen, like Rabbi Shimon said, by ner. That's a complicated way of saying something that he could have said very simply, but that's one option what he said. Meaning he said, regarding a menorah, it's like the halakha of Rabbi Shimon ben ner.
which is mutar. What did the Bishwan say, Benir? Mutar. So he said, well, you should know, regarding a menorah, it's as if he said, regarding a menorah, it's mutar, just like the ruling that Rabbi Shimon made by a ner. That's one option. Or dilma, or maybe, hora b'menorah le'isura, uch Rabbi Shimon b'ner le'hetera. Or it could be he was saying two statements. Meaning when Rabbi said, hora b'menorah, he ruled on the menorah, meaning, period. He ruled that a menorah is asur. Hidki, gezerah, the whole story. Oh, and regarding a ner, he ruled like Rabbi Shimon that what? It's mutar. According to this, he made two rulings. One ruled by menorah, and one ruled by ner. So we don't know what he meant. The Gemara leaves that off in a tiku. The guy went for Eliyahu Navi to ask him what exactly he meant when he said that. Actually, you could wait for the B and ask the B himself also. So again, just to review that last teku. The B made an ambiguous statement. It says, Hora b'minorah k'rabi Shimon b'nir. So one way it can mean it's one long statement. He ruled in a menorah that it's not mukseh like a ner according to the Bishimon. Just like a ner according to Bishimon is not mukseh, so to a menorah. Second option, no. Hora b'menorah. He ruled in a menorah, period, meaning that it is mukseh. Oh, and regarding a ner, he ruled like the Bishimon that it is mutar. So those are the two options, and that explained that one. We go further. Rav Malkiya, ikla lebe Rabbi Simlai. Rav Malkiya found himself in the house of Rabbi Simlai. Vitiltel sharga, and he moved on Shabbat a ner that went out, meaning it wasn't lit, of course, but it was lit through Shabbat. It went out, and then Rav Malkiya moved it. The ikpad Rabbi Simlai. Rabbi Simlai got upset. He was makpid on him. It seems Rav Simlai held like Rabbi Yehuda, and therefore when he saw Rav Malkiya moving the ner, he said, hey, what are you doing over here? It seems the other rabbi held like Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Yosef Galila'a ikla le'atred Rabbi Yosef b'Rabbi. Another story. Rabbi Yosef from the Galil, he found himself in the place of Rabbi Yosef b'Rabbi Hanina. Tiltil sharga. Again, he moved a ner on Shabbat after it went out. V'ikpid, v'ikpad, Rabbi Yosef b'Rabbi Hanina. And again, Rabbi Yosef b'Rabbi Hanina this time got upset at him. Obviously, you see the same mahloket. The one that moved it held like Rabbi Shimon. The one that got angry held like Rabbi Yehuda. Another story. Rabbi Abhu. Ki yekla le'atred Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi. Rabbi Abhu. When he found himself by Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi's territory, hava mitaltel sharga. So he would be lenient to move a ner that went out on Shabbat. Ki ikla le'atred Rabbi Yohanan. But when he would find himself in the territory of Rabbi Yohanan, lo hava mitaltel sharga. He was mahmir on himself. So the Gemara says, well, what did he hold like? Manafshach. If he holds like Rabbi Yehuda, le'avad ki Rabbi Yehuda, he should be mahmir wherever he is, not to move it. If he holds like Rabbi Shimon, le'avad ki Rabbi Shimon, he should be lenient wherever he is. So the Gemara said, no, le'onam ki Rabbi Shimon svidale. Really? Rabab, who held like Rabbi Shimon, what? You can move it. But when he was in Rabbi Yohanan's territory, out of kavod to Rabbi Yohanan, who he knew held like Rabbi Yehuda, he didn't want to start making troubles. Kavod, he was ma'amid on himself. But in truth, he held like Rabbi Shimon. So bottom line, you see, this machloket of Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon was really a machloket amongst a lot of the later rabbis as well. We go further. Amar of Yehuda. This is Rav Yehuda. Sharga de Meshah. That's an oil ner, oil receptacle. Like a lamp where you use oil. Sharga, a light de Meshah that's fueled with oil. Share le tiltula. It's permissible to move it on Shabbat after it went out. So it seems like he's going like Rabbi Shimon. That doesn't go with mukseh mahmat mi'us, So there's no issue of that. And for that matter, if it was lit through Shabbat, then already you have the machloket of Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda. But here it just sounds like it was a sharga de mishchad that was already lit, not on Shabbat. We don't want to get involved in that machloket at this point. We just want to say it was used before, but according to Rabbi Shimon, since he doesn't hold of Muksim Mahmat Mi'us, shari l'taltela. However, din nafta, if it's a lamp that's fueled with neft, neft is that smelly oil, smelly fuel, asul l'taltela, even according to Rabbi Shimon. Which means, while Rabbi Shimon does not hold of Muksim Mahmat Mi'us, why? Because he holds that bottom line, you can use it for something. However, when you fuel it with neft, once you fuel it with neft, you're not using it for anything else. Yeah, this is like so ma'us. There's levels of ma'us. This is like totally useless now because of the neft that you put in it. So we're making a chiluk now. When does Rabbi Shimon hold that we're lenient? That's only when it's muksim mahmat mi'us. However, you have something even worse than mi'us. This is a different level. Because even let's say on the oil receptacle, all right, you can clean it out. You could put stuff in it. Huh? It's usable still. But neft, what are you going to put in it? Even if you clean it out, it smells. It's not worth anything. So even the Bishamon's going to say mukseh. That's the opinion of who? That's the opinion of Rav Yehuda. Now, Rabban Rav Yosef Damri Tarvayu, but Rabban Rav Yosef come along and say, the nefta name share l'taltula. They come along and say, no, Rabbi Shimon is lenient even by the nev that you filled with neft. What's the logic? What could you use it for? So the Gemara is going to analyze that through the following story. Skip the parentheses. Rav Avya ikla lebe Rava. Story. Rav Avya found himself in the house of Rava. Hava me'isan bekar'e betina. His shoes or his feet were dirty with tina, with dirt, with tar. It seems he walked into Rava's house with tar on his feet. But that wasn't enough. Itve apuria. And he put his feet up on the bed, kamed Rava, in front of Rava. So now Rava got upset over here. I mean, he comes into his house with dirty feet, and now he puts them up on his bed. He's dirtying the bed. So, ikpad Rava. Rava got angry. So, how did his anger manifest? It says, ba'al letse'ure. He wanted to mitza'ir Rav Avya. Now, how is he going to mitza'ir him? How is he going to cause him pain? He's going to ask him some hard questions from the Talmud. He's going to ask him a very, tricky question, and he'll show Rav Avya that he doesn't know anything, and he'll say, okay, that's what you get for coming into the house with dirty shoes over. He's going to prove him that he's like, that he's ignorant in halakha. Amar le, so he tells him. This is Rabba telling Rav Avya now. My ta'amar Rabba v'Rav Yosef da'amri tarvayu shargad neftan namesh sharel teltula. Could you explain to me, Rav Avya, why Rabba and Rav Yosef both said that even a ner of neft is not mukseh? Hey, could you show what purpose could you use this for? How can they say it's not mukseh? It says, Amar le, hu'il v'chaza l'chisuyeh ba'mana. It says, what do you mean? It has a function. You might not be able to put things in it, but you could use it to cover up a keli, which is, let's say you have a pot, and you need to cover it. You could take this neft item and just put it right on top of the pot. You can use it as a pot cover, or you can use it as a bottle cover. There's a value to it. Therefore, it still has a function. So he answered him. Rava came right back. Rava comes along and says, that's your answer. Ela me'ata, according to that reasoning, called sirorot shebahaser metaltelin. According to you, rocks shouldn't be mukseh. Sirorot is rocks. Why? Hu'il v'hazya l'chesuye be'umana. Since you could take any rock and place them on top of your vessel in order to cover you. So if that's your logic, that you're telling me its value is to use as a cover, every rock should have the same functionality. So what are you talking about? We know rocks are
Mukse.
So he got him. Rav Avia comes back. Rav Avia says, no, big difference. Amadle, ha ika torat keli aleha. Ha neleka torat keli alehen. Big difference. A rock is not considered a keli. A rock is a functionless item. Therefore, even though, let's say, you could find a usage for it, but since it's not considered a keli, that usage is not going to make it not mukseh. However, this vessel over here is a keli, which means this ned that you're fueled with neft, bottom line, going into Shabbat, it was a vessel. And bottom line, once it's a vessel, once it's considered a keli, meaning it has functionality to it, so now already I can say I'll use it for a different function, which means now I can't use it to put stuff inside it, so I'll use it to cover a pot. But don't compare that to a rock. A rock has no functionality at all. Now you want to say, no, but you can cover a thing. That covering a pot only works on kelim, only on something that is a functional item going into Shabbat. And therefore, big difference. So this neft item that you used, what's the value of it now? Cover a pot. And he proves it to him. He says like this, Milo Tanya, didn't we learn in the Braita? Hashirim v'anizamim v'atabaot. These are three types of jewelry. Shirim would be, that she says, it's adot. That's like bracelets. And nezamim would be nose rings. Tabaot is regular finger rings. Harein kechol akelim anitalim b'chatzer. They have a value, a status that you can move these items in a private courtyard. But you can't wear them, not in the private courtyard, and not in the public domain. This opinion holds, jewelry is forbidden to be worn on Shabbat by a lady. Why? Because we're concerned she might take it off to show it. And by taking it off, she might come to walk. You know, ladies show their rings sometimes. They take off the ring, look at my new ring. And now they're going to start walking with it. So the rabbis forbade ladies to wear jewelry in the public domain. And for that matter, some rabbis even went so far to say, even in the chatzer, they forbid her to wear it, because they might come to wear it in the public domain. But what do they allow her to do? But they're not mukseh. I mean, they could move it around. I mean, they didn't give it a status of mukseh itself. Well, she's not allowed to wear it. But let's say she wants to just pick up the ring to put it down somewhere else. So the statement said, Hashirim v'anizamim v'hatabaot harehen kechol hakelim anitalim b'chatzer. It has a status of what? Of a regular keli that is movable in a court. It's not wearable, but it is non-mukseh. Ve'amar Ula, and Ula said, Ma ta'am hu'il ve'ika torat keli aleha. Because bottom line, it's not a rock. These are functional items. It's a piece of jewelry, bottom line. It has a function to it. But you're right, we didn't want you to wear it in the public domain because you might take it off. But since it has a status of a keli to it, it's non-mukseh. So too here, in the case of the menorah of neft, is it a vessel? Yes. Did it have a function to it? Yes. However, a rock has no function to start off. A rock is a rock. It's not a status of a keli. So Rav Avia answered Rav Avia, very good. Rav Avia tried to trap him. Rav Avia said, oh, you know something? Explain Rav Avia, Rav Yosef. Why did they allow the menorah of neft? He said, what do you mean? Very simply. You can cover something with it. Oh, cover something? Rocks. We don't have rocks. Rocks is no proof. That's not a keli. This is a keli. And I'll prove it to you. Jewelry. They allow you to move it in the chatzer. You can't wear it, but you can move it. Why? Because bottom line, it's a keli. So comes the Gemara and says, Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzhak. When Rav Nachman Bar Yitzhak heard this story of the dialogue between Rav Avia and Rav Avia, he said, Barich Rahamana. Blessed be God. De lo kasife Rava Rav Avia, that he didn't let Rava embarrass Rav Avia. I mean, God protected Rav Avia. You know, Baruch Hashem, Rav Avia got saved from the embarrassment or the, you know, the shame of Rava. Comes the Gemara further. Rame le Abaye le Rava.
Abaye brought a contradiction to Rabbah. What's the contradiction? We'll see right now. Tanya, we have a braita. Braita number one. Mutar shemen shebener v'shebekehara. You have a ner, it lit through Shabbat. Now you have the leftover oil. First opinion says, what do you do with the leftover oil on Shabbat? Asur. Which opinion is that? Rabbi Yehuda. The Rabbi Shimon, matir. Right? Rabbi Shimon says, mutar. Right? Once it went out. Alma, implying what? Le Rabbi Shimon, let le mukseh. Okay, something we've known already, that Rabbi Shimon is lenient regarding mukseh. Ah, urminu, but we have a contradiction. Rabbi Shimon omer. Rabbi Shimon said, kol she'en mumo nikar me'erev yom tov, en ze min amuchan. What's the case? On Yom Tov, you're allowed to make shechita? Yes. Now, let's say you have an animal that's a bechor. It's a firstborn. Now, bechor is Kodesh. You're not allowed to slaughter a bechor for personal use. Certainly not on Yom Tov. It's a bechor. Unless the bechor, that animal, gets a blemish. The blemish is called a mum. And not any blemish. It has to be a mum kavua. It has to be a permanent blemish. That renders the animal unsacred. And therefore, you're allowed to slaughter it. You're allowed to eat it. The question was like this. Let's say, going into Yom Tov, you had this animal that was a bechor. You looked at it before Yom Tov. You didn't see really any mum on it. All of a sudden, on Yom Tov, you started to notice it's got something. Rabbi Shimon says, Mukseh, you can't eat this animal on Yom Tov. Why? Since going into Yom Tov, you didn't know about it. Going into Yom Tov, it was a full-fledged Bechor. Now on Yom Tov, you started to have a question. Mukseh, it was out of your mind, so to speak. What do you mean, out of your mind? Does Rabbi Shimon subscribe to Mukseh? Rabbi Shimon holds nothing. We don't care Mukseh. Which means, just like the Ner, wasn't that out of your mind also? I mean, it was lit through Ben HaShemashot. You knew you couldn't use it when it was lit. And still, once it went out, it was permissible. So the same thing. Once already you recognize that the animal has a mum kavua, use it. So that was Rabbah's contradiction in statements of Rabbi Shimon. Again, actually that was Abaye bringing this contradiction to Rava. So the Gemara says, Hachi Hashta, could you compare these two cases? Totally different. Why? Hatam, by the case of the Ner, Adam Yoshevu Mitzapeh, a person sits and anticipates, Ematai Tichbe Nero, which means a person knows eventually the Ner is going to go out. So when he lit it, he knows it's just a matter of time. So it's always on his mind that what? It's going to be usable. However, Hacha, by the case of the Bechor, Adam Yoshevu Mitzapeh Matai Yipol Bomum, but does a guy sit and say, oh, when is this Bechor going to have a blemish? Now, even further, Memar Amar, the guy will say like this, Miyemar dinafil bemuma. First of all, who says that really there's going to be a mum on it? Which means, Erev Yom Tov, there was nothing. Right? So, on Erev Yom Tov, the guy's thinking in his brain, who says that there's ever going to be a mum on this animal on Yom Tov? Ve'imtem selama dinafil bemuma. And even if you say, it'll get a mum, Miyemar dinafil bemum kavua. Who says it's going to be a permanent mum that makes the Bechor not Kodesh, ve'imtem selama dinafil bemum kavua. And even if you're going to say it's a mum kavua, miyemar dimizdakek lehacham. Who says we're going to find a rabbi to make a ruling on it? Which means the owner cannot make a ruling on it. You got to take it to an expert rabbi, and he's got to look at the animal and make a halachic decision. So there's so many unknowns over here. There's so many who says, by the case of the Ner, guy lights it Erev Shabbat or Erev Yom Tov, he knows. In 2 hours it's going out. Fact.
allocate the oil list. So therefore it's on his mind that what? After it goes out, he'll use it. By the case of the Bechor, look how many unknowns there are. Who says it's going to get a mum? And even if it gets a mum, who says it's going to be mum kavua? And even if it's mum kavua, who says I'm going to find a rabbi that's willing to make a ruling on it on Yom Tov? So therefore, since you have so many variables like that, even the Bishamon will say, mukse. So it's not a contradiction. The cases are intrinsically different. Good? Mm-hmm. Comes Gemara and says, Mativ Rami Barhama. Rami Barhama wrote a question on this. Mefirim nidarim b'shabbat, v'nish'alim nidarim shem netzorech ha-shabbat. A husband is allowed to nullify the vows of his wife on Shabbat. Mefirim nidarim b'shabbat. Pirush, a husband has the right, husband always has a right to nullify his wife's vows, under certain circumstances, of course. But these rules apply even on Shabbat. And for that matter, it says, v'nish'alim nidarim. And you're also allowed to go to a rabbi, and he's able to absolve a person from vows, shem letzorech Shabbat. So long as the vows are have application on Shabbat. For example, let's say a lady makes a vow, I'm not eating bread. Now, on Shabbat you have to have bread. So the husband, he is such a vow, he's able to say, I nullify it. And therefore she can eat bread. So the Gemara says, ve'amai. Why do you allow her to eat bread? Meaning, once she made a vow against bread, that bread really becomes mukseta. Correct? Mm-hmm. Right or wrong? When you make a vow that you're not going to eat bread, so bread is off limits to you. So technically the bread at that point becomes mukse. So now the Gemara says, Lema mi yemad mizdakek la ba'al. Just like you said, by the case of the Bechor, one of the sifekot is, who said you're going to find a rabbi that's going to want to deal with the case? Mm-hmm. So say the same thing by this lady that made a vow. She made a vow, I'm not eating bread. Now, happened to be the husband came along and nullified it. But who says it was in her mind at the time that she made the vow that the husband is going to come and nullify it? And therefore, maybe it's like a long shot. Mm-hmm. And therefore, it's the same unknown that you said by the case of the Bechor. It's like you said, who said we're going to find the Hakam? So say the same thing over here. Who says that when this lady made the vow, it was in her mind that what? The husband might come nullify it. Could be in her mind, it's like a Sefek. So therefore, the bread should remain Mukseh. Because it wasn't in her mind that the husband is going to nullify it. Gemara says, no, it's in her mind. Why? Hatam kederav Pinchas b'shemed rava. Because we have a rule regarding the darim. The amar of Pinchas b'shemed rava, kol hanoderet al da'at ba'ala hi noderet. Rule. A lady that makes vows, her intention is, it's on her husband's will. Based on the husband's will. Let's analyze for a second. How does a husband have a right to nullify the wife's vows? The wife made a vow, and the husband nullifies. What's the rationale here? Because every vow that a lady makes, it's built into the vow that she's doing it on her husband's consent, if he accepts it or not. So therefore, by vows of a lady, it's automatic that the assumption of a vow is if the husband accepts it. So we don't say by vows, who says? What do you mean? You made your whole vow based on what? Your husband's approval. Therefore, on Shabbat, a lady makes a vow, I'm not eating bread. At that point, technically the bread should be mukseh. Husband comes along 5 minutes later and says, out, nullified. What's the deen? She could eat the bread. And we're not going to say, like the case of the Bechor, by the case of the Bechor, would we say, let's say got a mum. We say, who says we're going to find the Hakam? Yeah, okay. Who says we're going to find the Hakam? That's already a long shot, maybe. But the fact that the husband, who says the husband's going to get involved with the vow? What do you mean? The whole, it's predicated on the fact when the lady makes a vow, that it's al-da'at, her husband. And therefore, she assumes that the husband will either
continue the vow for or nullify it. Therefore, once he nullifies it, she's able to eat the bread. Different case. Comes the Gemara and says, okay, we can't ask on that case, but how about the second case? Tashema, nish'alim nididarim shel tzorek ha-shabbat b'shabbat. You're allowed to go to a rabbi on Shabbat, and he could nullify for you a vow that you made regarding Shabbat. Similar case. Let's say you made a vow, you're not eating bread. There's no husband. Now you got to go to the rabbi. So say the same thing. The amai. How could you say that you could break the vow on Shabbat? Lema mi yemar demizdamek lechakam. Why don't you say the same thing? A husband, fine. The lady makes a vow, I'll doubt the husband. Does a lady make a vow, I'll doubt the rabbi?
No.
And therefore, why don't you say that the rabbi, even if he makes hatarat nedarifa, it should still remain mutzik, because it wasn't in our mind to get an annulment. Just like you said, it's not in your mind to find the rabbi to matir the bichor. Gemara says, no. Hatam ilom is dakek lehakam, sagela begimel hijotot. By nedarim, if you don't find a rabbi to nullify it, you could find three hijotot, three simpletons to nullify it. Or you got to get three guys to sit together, and they tell them, mutarim lach, mutarim lach, mutarim lach. So therefore, it's not so difficult. You might not find a rabbi, but you'll find three commoners. However, hacha, by bechor, mi yemar demizdamek lehacham. Bechor, you need an expert rabbi. And you can't rely on three commoners. So therefore, what the Gemara is saying at this point, let's review this last keta. The Gemara said two cases that we thought were contradictory, but we made peace. The first case was what? The leftover oil, Rabbi Shimon says, after it goes out, mutar. So Rabbi Shimon doesn't hold up mukseh. However, the Bechor case is what? The Bechor is an animal on Erev Yom Tov that does not have a mum. All of a sudden on Yom Tov, a mum surfaces. It should be slaughterable. Rabbi Shimon says, no, mukseh. Why? Say the same thing. Bottom line, it went into Yom Tov, maybe not usable, and now it's usable, just like the Ner. Nah, the Ner, it went in non-usable, but you knew in your mind it's going to go out and become usable. Therefore, it's not mukseh. But the Bechor, there's a lot of who says. Who says it's going to get a mum? And if it gets a mum, who says it's kavua? And if it's kavua, it says you're going to find the rabbi. Oh, on that last point, who says you're going to find the rabbi? That already means it's out of your mind. Because who says? So we ask two questions on that. One is, how could a husband nullify vows of his wife on Shabbat? Vows that are Shabbat related. Like a vow not to eat bread. Vow not to eat bread means what? She's not eating bread, it's asurta. Therefore the bread is mukseh. The husband comes along and says, alright, nullified. She can eat the bread. What do you mean? What do you mean? Who says, say the same thing. It's out of her mind. When she made the neder, who says that she's ever going to, the husband's ever going to get involved? Nah. A lady, when she makes a vow, it's on the assumption that her husband's going to get involved with the neder. That's the whole reason why the husband has a right to nullify the vow, because she does it on not the husband. So therefore, when the husband gets involved, which she expected him to from the beginning, it becomes a mukseh. Only one question and we'll end with this. Even if a lady makes a neder against, let's say, eating bread, why should the bread be mukseh? But she can't eat it. But others can eat that bread. So technically, it should she should be able to move it, give it to other people. I mean, just because she makes a neder against bread, it becomes mukseh? So the Tosafot explains over here that we have to say it's talking about a specific scenario. It's talking about where it's her bread, and she made a vow as well that nobody else can have it either. So now already, it's her bread, so nobody else can take it. She vowed her bread against other people, and herself as well. So now already it's going to be mukseh. Now the husband has a right to nullify that vow. So the husband comes along and says, nullified. Now already, it's permissible for her, it's permissible for others as well. So therefore, that would be a case where it would be mukseh. But on a regular piece of bread, seemingly it should not be mukseh. That's the opinion of the Tosafot. However, the Ran, Rabbeinu Nissim, holds, no. Simple. Once a person makes a neder on bread, even though it's permissible for others, it still maintains mukseh for the person themselves. So therefore the lady can be regular bread. She forbade it on herself, have a mukseh. The Gemara says further, but the case of the hakam, where a lady makes a neder, or a man makes a neder for that matter, on Shabbat, the rabbi can nullify it. Oh, say the same question. Who says that the rabbi is going to get involved? That's easy. Because even if he doesn't want to get involved, you'll find to be hijotot. By the Bechor, it's a really who says. Because you need to find a expert rabbi, the only one that can make the ruling. Baruch Adonai Le'olam.
Amen. Amen.